Now we'll bring up Terry Dancer, Director of Digital Aerospace and Defense for ON Semiconductor, and he'll talk about what are you going to do with your life cycle.
Hi. Thank you, everybody. Well, I'm happy to say I'm the first speaker up here that is a U.S. citizen, so thank you very much. Although I'm from Montana, so that might be considered Southern Canada. I don't think so. Okay. So what are you doing with your life cycle? As stated, I'm the director of Digital ASICs, primarily on the aerospace and defense for ON Semiconductor. So my talk here is going to be really centered around that theme and what we're seeing and what we're doing within that marketplace. Much like your life cycle for your semiconductors, your personal life cycle goes through some of the same stages throughout your life. You have your concept and design. You go through your education sent part of your life as you start ramping up your program. And then your work, when you go off and go into your job after college and work through that large portion of your life, that's really your high volume of your semiconductor. And the goal is to reach retirement, your sunset years, in a state where you can actually be happy and settle down. Now, we all know with obsolescence, that can be a little bit of a hassle, so we'll talk about that. When we talk about life cycle management, I put it into two categories. You have standard products and custom silicon. Standard products are capacitors, resistors, diodes, things that you can have multiple sources on. So for your BOM, you want to have multiple sources if possible. So if you do have an issue within your supply chain, you can easily move over to another vendor. Where I come from is more on the custom side of the house with ASICs, custom ASICs, and this can also be included with FPGAs, where truly they are sourced by one supplier. So you do an FPGA, you do an ASIC. It's sourced by one supplier. And so your life cycle management and how you deal with your life cycle for that particular program, that product, is very, very critical for the future. And there's two ways of managing this, either reactive, which is what we typically do, or proactive. And we're going to push a little bit on the proactive today. All right. Again, looking at it from my point of view, from my glasses, there are three ways that I see end-of-life issues. First is wafer fabrication. You put a device in, you do a custom ASIC, you do an FPGA, it's in a fab, it's in a certain technology. That technology over time becomes older and older. You have Moore's Law where you're trying to get denser circuit, more into a device. And so that piece of silicon, the equipment for that silicon, is now seeing less and less value, less product being run through it. It's older, it's seeing maintenance issues. Vendors now want to repurpose that line, repurpose that floor space for new equipment, for the strategic future of the company and for their customers. And so we see end-of-life issues here. Sort and test, something that we don't really think about. But once you come out of your wafer fab, you have to sort the product. You assemble, you do qualification, you have to do a final test, final outgoing inspection, and kick it out to, for us to kick out to our customers, to you guys. This equipment can be very old. We are still doing products that were designed for the aerospace and defense industry. I was a test engineer 26 years ago on this stuff. These testers are 26 years old. They're supposed to be up and running 24 hours a day. Can you imagine still using the computer that you had back in the early 90s on your desk and having it be reliable, productive, and actually meet the needs today? Well, we see that with sort and test for our products. Now, this can be overcome probably easier than the next item. Next item that we see is assembly. This is really the crux of where most of our issues are today, besides the wafer fabrication. Programs, products, again, are getting more complex. You're putting more on a chip. Things are running faster. You have high-speed inputs, outputs. And so the packaging of today is not the packaging that we had 25 years ago. Those package types are becoming less and less prevalent. The lines are not putting out, again, as much volume as they used to. And the equipment is old and needing repair. And so we see that a lot of vendors are trying to get rid of that those assembly lines. On top of it, we have an additional issue with packaging, and that's environmental. the world is trying to get into a little bit greener. So we're changing the bomb, changing the material, making it more green, getting rid of lead. And for the aerospace and defense, lead is very important, tin whisker mitigation. And so we see a lot of the problems over the last 4 or 5 years on assembly. And so these are issues that we've had to deal with, we've had to plan for. Bell curve. Thank you for letting me have the bell curve. So I do appreciate it. But what we're trying to show here is truly, on the bottom is time. And then volume is, we're showing the volume for a product type, a fab technology, whatever it may be. You go through your growth, your strategic growth, where you're putting new product into an assembly line, into a wafer fabrication. Then over time, you slowly start to dwindle down. And on the right-hand side, you can see as it starts getting lower and lower, it becomes economically inviable to keep going. Or the materials are just not there, or the maintenance cost is too high. At some point in time, you're going to hit on that decline where the vendor is going to have to do an end of life. Now, it may be the silicon vendor, such as ON Semiconductor. It could be our sub-tiers, assembly, mold compound, wherever it may be. So as we go across and think about our obsolescence management, we can put a thought process in our head of our human life cycle where we invest in our education for the future. We invest into retirement with 401k, IRA, but we do this investment along the entire life cycle so that at the end, when we know that we're going to come towards those sunset years, the EOLs, that we have a nest egg there. We have a path, we have a plan, we know how to move forward. So we have to kind of combine the two thought processes into one. All right. So we can take end-of-life notices into two places. You have your planned end-of-life. You're given a JDEC standard. Hey, end-of-life is coming up. You have this amount of time to give me your order. We'll deliver about this amount of time, and we can work together to figure out last time buy, bridge buy, what's our future? Are we going to redesign? How are we going to manage this? The other is unplanned. This can be catastrophic events, tsunamis, earthquakes, floods. Businesses is going out of business, just shutting the doors all of a sudden. We see all of these things. We know that the end-of-life notices in general create problems with your program sustainability. When you do your last-time build, there's a risk involved here. Do you order enough? Do you order too much? How much capital do you want to put in? How much inventory do you want to hold? If you don't do enough, down the road, you may all of a sudden find yourself short. You could be doing some other business, but now you don't have the products to handle that. Counterfeit products are now an issue of getting put into your supply chain as you scramble to try to figure out how to manage the situation. And then the cost of redesign, of qualification, pulling engineers and all that off of strategic initiatives to handle current production problems, all of it becomes an issue. So how do we deal with proactive? Well, on the proactive, you need to make sure that you deal with this up in the design stage. Make sure that you're managing it from the inception of the design process throughout the life cycle. And you have to consider the true cost of obsolescence throughout the entire supply chain or timeline. You want to make sure that you're not dealing with doing things very, very cheap up front to save a dollar that's going to cost you a lot in the back end. Always try to choose a supplier with long-term technology strategy. And then do risk management once you are in production. I have a customer coming in next week. We're going to sit down, take a look at our entire product line that we supply to them, and go through those three items, wafer fab, sort assembly, test, and do a risk assessment and figure out what our future holds and how do we manage that. This is key. This is critical, especially for the custom devices. A couple of items that you can think about up front, being on the proactive side of your life cycle, is how do you do a SoC, a system on a chip, either with an FPGA or an ASIC. So you're trying to gather more products into a single chip, minimize the number of items that you have out there for potential end of life, and now you can concentrate on really managing that one device versus 15. And also design your circuit for future conversion. Don't try to tie into one technology. Make it so it can be portable across technologies. I'll talk a little bit more about that. when I say design for conversion, like FPGA to ASIC, ASIC to ASIC, FPGA to FPGA, I say here the FPGAs are excellent for prototyping. Well, heck, they're excellent for most everything that's out there. Majority of the world is using FPGAs, and they should. They're a great piece of silicon. They have a lot of flexibility. Low cost of entry with the NRE, excellent for prototyping. Very, very quick for doing turns on ECOs, in code development with software and hardware, and very quick to ramp up in manufacturing. But if you are in the aerospace and defense or other markets that require a long life cycle, really need to start thinking about ASICs, because ASICs provide you better long-term cost, performance, security, and lifecycle support. You now own that device. You have control over it. You decide where you go to for a vendor. Design for portability. This is one of the things, question was asked a little bit earlier. Really have your design set up so that you can port it to technology. Make it technology independent. Think about the IP you're putting into that design. Trying to lock in it, not lock into a single source. If you use an FPGA, that can be very difficult. But there are design techniques out there that you can talk about. System on a chip. This is what we see as key today. We have taken boards with 15 FPGAs and multiple other components and put it into a single ASIC. So now you have one component that you have to manage, that you have to control, that your procurement team has to keep an eye on for obsolescence. And so you don't have to worry about a process shrink of something that changes specs, and now you have to go through a requal and constant recalls of all the different components. You're still just managing just one device. So we think that going with a system on chip where you're adding in microprocessors, logic, memory, DSPs, capacitors, analog components is really a key for trying to manage your obsolescence long term. Identify the right partner. Now, there are many partners out there, stateside partners, other partners that you can look at that are the right partners. I'm not just touting us, but I think there are some really good options out there. But you need to make sure they have the experience out that's required for you. Suitable technologies that go all the way from legacy. If you need to maintain a legacy component that still uses 5-volt core technology, all the way down to some of the newer FinFET capabilities. Someone that can manage everything you need for a vendor out there. Have strong relationships within the high-rel community, the long life cycle community. Automotive is key, aerospace and defense, industrial, medical, implantable medical. You'd be amazed at how long you have to keep silicon around for implantable medical. It takes years to design, years to get FDA approval. And so 7-8 years into your design process, you get your first production. Well, you need to keep that going for another 10, 15 years. So you have to get a partner that's used to all of this, that understands and is set up for it. All right, I'm going a little bit fast here. We'll get us back on track. All right, so much like our lives, we must plan on our silicon's retirement. The goal is to try to make it carefree. Now, we're never going to make it completely carefree. Anytime you have an end-of-life situation or a sunset situation, it adds a little bit of stress to your life. But if you do things properly up front, you can minimize the stress, minimize the number of components you have to be stressed about, and try to make this as easy on yourself as possible. Think about the true cost of your obsolescence. Don't do things cheaper up front just because it's cheaper now. Think about the entire life cycle, especially if you are in the aerospace and defense or other markets that require long, long-term support. If you're into a gaming system where you know you're going to have 24 months of silicon out there, life cycle, you don't have to worry about it as much. You do what's fast and furious and get you out there. But you need to think about the true cost of that obsolescence. We do believe that ASICs can be the right investment for your product over a long-term life cycle. I had a product engineer come up into my office about 3 weeks ago with a problem on a device that he was looking at. And I was a test engineer on it back in 1993, and it was an old tester, it was assembly-level language. He goes, well, what can you do with this? Well, this is 26 years later. He's asking me questions on something that we're still dealing with today on ASICs, and I just looked at him and laughed. I can't even spell test program anymore. It's no way. We do have some additional information. There's a blog we have online here, Managing the Inevitable. I invite you to go off and take a look and read that blog. But I also invite you to be working with your vendor, whoever it may be, early on and often up front to deal with your obsolescence manager. Communication between vendor and customer is key to minimize impacts long term. So.
All right, let's go into the first question. All right, there's a lot of meat here from Brad Way. Mergers have shown to be disruptive in the short term as manufacturers update their portfolios by discontinuing parts. Has anyone been able to determine the long-term effects? Are manufacturers likely to produce parts longer after their portfolio has been narrowed? That was Brad from IBIT Systems.
Right. And as mergers do happen, and we see this within ON Semiconductor, we do use this as a chance to try to prune the tree, so to speak, right? You try to minimize some of the devices or products that are out there that are not making money, making poor revenue. And so you do see that with your normal mergers and acquisitions. I don't believe that by doing that, you're going to automatically see a longer-term supply of what is kept. I think that's they're two independent issues.
Brad, did we do a good job on that one? Did I hear you? Yep. Okay, we'll go to the next one. I've noticed the diversification of components to target different industries. Think flexible terminations, epoxy pads, and automotive-grade testing on capacitors. Will we see this diversification on multiple different components? That's from David at Meggett.
So I'm going to answer this from my perspective, and it's, again, a digital ASIC perspective. I was contacted about a year ago from the government, DMEA, talking to me, because, you know, I'm known within the aerospace and defense, but they're talking to us about automotive and automotive standards and applying that to the military programs, and so that they can try to figure out how to have higher volume or how to utilize other technology or other qualifications within their DoD systems. And so there is a little bit of this trying to figure out how the industries can merge and how the industries can utilize similar silicon and give the DoD an advantage, at least, of having a bigger pool of products to pull from. I'm not sure that answers your question.
Daniel, do you have any more do you want to share with us on this one, or did we cover it? Awesome. Awesome. Now we'll go to the floor, and we'll take questions from folks. So let me see some raised hands. If we got one, go right there. Yeah. Perfect. From Willie.
Yeah. I had a question about the system on a chip.
Yes.
I can see how it reduces the risk of having all these components. You just have one that you're managing. But aren't you increasing the risk of just having one source for that system on a chip? So it's kind of a trade-off of risk.
It is a trade-off of risk, and that's why I really recommend you go off and really vet the vendor out, make sure that they are in the marketplace, they're committed to long-term support. You know, if you're dealing with let's just go off to gaming systems where you're going to be, or phones where you may be dealing with millions and millions of parts a year or a month, typically you do go off and do a co-design and have multiple sources. In the high rail marketplace where you're dealing with the military and aerospace, where it can be tens of thousands of units a year over a 15, 20 year lifespan, it really is hard to get two vendors to split that volume in half and move forward. So it is a risk, but that's where I think if you do combine products, you're now taking the risk into one part versus 20 or 30. Your procurement team can now concentrate on managing that one part instead of having their mind share spread across all these different vendors and all these different parts, and you can do a better job of actually managing that program and that product.
So you sort of see SOC as a way to get more transparency in the supply chain.
It is. And it really allows the procurement people to have more control and actually be driving a little bit more on what they have.
Outstanding. I think we have a question right over there.
What are the challenges that you face when you design an ASIC? I mean, I would suspect that there will be challenges with this production as well that you have to deal with that I don't know of.
With what production? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
So with ASICs, so say you're designing an ASIC, right?
Yes.
So what are the challenges with the, I guess, with the designing in an ASIC as far as its maintenance and continuance in life?
What we try to do, and especially within my business unit where we do have long-term support, when we go through the design process, first off, make sure we have good, clean design flow because you do want to have portability. You do want to have it so that we can target different technologies. But aside from that, utilizing standardized IP, making sure that whatever fabrication process we pick, whether it's on one of our own fabs or an external fab, is a vanilla technology. We're not trying to do some boutique technologies because those tend to end of life quicker than the mainstream technologies. And so we will pick technologies internally that are being used for new programs, new designs across a wide diversification of markets. And then also trying to pick out the appropriate packaging assembly. I'm telling you right now, the assemblies business out there in the world today is going through huge consolidation and pruning of what they do. So we are very, very careful what we pick, how we pick, and try to make sure that we are looking at solutions that would be long-term for us.
Okay, do we have one more question? There we go, we have a couple more. We have a few minutes.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask you a question related to the bullet about measuring the true cost of obsolescence over the product.
Yes.
What are some of the things that I should consider when I'm measuring that cost, what factors I'm looking at?
So some of the things that we think about is if you have a large bill of material on your board and you're trying to now think about, okay, do I keep that or do I do a system on a chip? What are the probabilities of these devices of the big, you know, big bill of material of going obsolete, and what is the number of anticipated redesigns and requalifications you're going to have to go through that life cycle? We have some customers that go through requalifications every 5 to 7 years. It's just planned. They know they're going to have to do it. And so looking at your system and your situation, what do you plan on for requalifications? And if you can minimize that during those requalification cycles, maybe remove a couple of them, how does that affect your cost long term? If you do have to, if you think about it sometime down in the middle of it, if you do have to replace, let's say, an FPGA, you pick an older one. Someone here was talking earlier about using, making sure you use newer silicon. Absolutely. But if you do, what is the cost of that redesign? You should be able to model that, plan that, and figure out over the life cycle what your cost of obsolescence will be and how to manage that cycle.
Okay, I think we had one over here, too.
Yeah, you said we'd be going to maybe more ASICs. And it seemed like when I first started in the 80s, we used a lot of ASICs.
Yes.
And we slowly, I guess, migrated away from them because maybe FPGAs were cheaper. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the obsolescence that we have today. The life cycles are shorter today. Things are turning a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Is it a trend that's maybe coming back and will take hold? And or how do you see that shaping up moving
forward? We are seeing it come back. Again, I have nothing but praise for FPGAs. I think they are a great piece of silicon. They're great for the industry. But if you know what I am seeing today is if I'm seeing more SoCs being brought into aerospace and military systems than before. The capabilities there, we have stateside, some stateside manufacturing. We still have a problem with some of the lower geometries, of course. But I am seeing an uptick on ASICs. ASICs had a bad name because there's a lot of players out there back in the 80s and 90s, and then they started dropping off, and a lot of end-of-life issues occurred, and we received a lot of black eyes. I think we've stabilized. There are silicon providers now that I think there are fewer of us, but we have proven that our long-term stability, and now FPGAs are starting to drop off every now and then or changing, and that's causing a problem for our customers. And so I have aerospace customers that went full FPGA, And over the last about 3 years, they're pulling back out of that, coming into an ASIC, because they think they can manage their supply chain better.
It appears we have one more.
Hi. The company I work for has a lot of legacy instruments that are built around older FPGA platforms. Mm-hmm. And we're reluctant. I basically perform CPR every day on a lot of our
legacy
platforms. And how do you manage these older FPGAs? Is it just last time buys and like store and maintain them in good storage conditions? Is there any way to maybe plan or maybe buy the IP and continue to make?
No, it's hard to buy the IP. I've had customers go off to the Xilinx and Altera and be able to pull that off, but they're usually the big guys that have, you know, that can flex their muscle pretty hard with them. Yeah, and so I understand that. You know, there's a couple of options for you, and that'd be, you know, retargeting it. If you have the design capability, still retargeting it into a newer FPGA. When you start talking about these sunset FPGAs, the problem with going to ASICs on those is the volume. Does the volume make sense or not? And so if it's really small volume, that's where you have a problem with going to an ASIC. What you can do, if they're small, and with today's technology, you can fit more logic into a certain area of ASIC silicon, you can take three or four of them, put them into a single ASIC, be able to have them different personalities by a bond out, and get your volume up that way. But typically, what you need to be doing is making sure you have the code that's sitting there, and perhaps even retargeting to a newer, small FPGA. It's tricky. And really what's tricky is you find on the older programs having design files around that you believe are the true golden design files, and having synchronous design versus asynchronous design. What was the design environment? Was it schematic capture? Was it RTL? Was it, you know, it gets to be difficult.